the good news station, WCNO, Palm City.
And all those beautiful young soldiers from Russia and beautiful young soldiers from Ukraine, needlessly giving their lives up for old men that, Putin and I are virtually the same age. And I think if we had met little boys and we're playing baseball together, hey, let's grow up and get positions of power and make the world a better place. And I'm so disappointed in Putin. I'm just so disappointed. And there might be other things behind it. I don't know. You know, there are those that say that the Nazis are still alive and well in Ukraine, and there's other excuses that we don't know about. Some of these are theories. Some of them might be very true. I don't know. Have you heard anything about these theories about the SS guys still prevailing?
I've heard all sorts of theories, Ukraine? But honestly, Rhett, I don't know that it makes a lot of sense to give a lot of airtime to it because, we're just speculating about all sorts of crazy stuff. You know, and
let's focus on the Lord. Yeah. Now, you're a young rich kid. You were like me. And we both have gone through ups and downs in life. We both came to know the Lord later in life. And when I went to Africa, when I went to Zimbabwe, I remember I was scared. I mean, it was culture shock. It was. I'm glad I went there before I went to Haiti, because Haiti probably would have been worse. But now I was seasoned when I went there. But when I went to Zimbabwe, did you find yourself? I mean, I know you're married. You're more older than me when you went, and you're a family man with three children, so you're pretty adult. Mm-hmm. I went when I was still, pretty much a kid. Maybe I still am, keeping my child alive. Yeah. Were you fearful at all? Did you find yourself in culture shock?
Well, in other words, the experience that you're describing, when I was the only white person in a particular town, that happened back in 2018 on the sabbatical when I was there in Tanzania for about 5 weeks. And Bishop Bella, or Dr. Bella at the time, said, hey, I want to give you the full cultural Tanzanian experience. And he took me to the interior of the country and to some of the more remote cities and towns. And in some of those towns, I was the only white person. And you can imagine that as you're going through the open marketplaces and everything else, that all eyes are on me as I'm going through those marketplaces. And it's a very uncomfortable feeling. And so was I scared? I wasn't terribly scared because I was with Dr. Bell and he reassured me the whole time, hey, don't worry about it. As long as you're with me, there's absolutely no problem for you to just stick close to me. But here's what I will tell you. The times when I was most afraid was when we would have to get transportation from one place to another. And when you're doing that in Tanzania, you're using all kinds of different transportation. And one of the ways that you get around is by riding on motorcycle taxis. And I can tell you that was the most terrifying experience that I had in Tanzania, was riding on the back of a motorcycle taxi.
And they probably go pretty dang quick too, right?
Yes, they go very fast anyway, and they weave in and out of traffic. But I think in this particular case, the taxi drivers had a particular joy in the fact that they had this, what they call a mzungu. All right, so the white people are called mzungus in Tanzania, and mzungu means one who wanders. And the reason why we're called mzungus is because the white people come in, they wander around, but they never stay. They always go back home again. And so when they had the mzungu on the back of the motorcycle, I think this particular taxi driver was taking great joy in terrifying me by going so fast and weaving in and out that I was screaming in this taxi driver's ear. And I know that he could not understand a word I was saying because he speaks Swahili or some other tribal language, but I let him know I was not happy. And then I had to tell Dr. Bella later, I said, we're not doing that ever again.
That happened to me in Dallas a month and a half ago. We got picked up at midnight at the airport by this guy. And this guy was going 110 miles an hour, right, getting us to our Hilton Hotel. And I was like, I felt like saying, please slow down, but I didn't. Yeah. But,
Yeah. Well, it's one thing to be in a car. It's another thing to be on the back of a motorcycle in Tanzania.
Oh, my word.
Nobody watches the traffic lights, no one, I mean, it's just like craziness on the road.
Now, Tanzania is one of the poorest nations, I think in the top 25 poorest nations in the world. Yeah. How did that deprivation affect you?
It's number 25 currently. At not too long ago, maybe 25 years ago, it was number three, the third poorest nation in the whole world. So they've really advanced in many ways. I mean, they found gold in Tanzania, which I think has advanced the country quite a bit in terms of their GDP. But I can tell you that that level of poverty is something that most of us have never experienced, where literally they see a person with white skin from the West, and they have this tradition there that if you meet the right person from the West, it can change your destiny. And so many of them are looking to me or to other people from the West and thinking, maybe this is the person who's going to change my destiny. And so they're very much wanting to get to know you. Go ahead.
What'd you say?
I just said they're very anxious to get to know you, but many times you have to just keep a clear boundary with them. They want to know what your phone number is. They want to know what your Facebook page is. They want
I remember when I was doing my concert in Chibok Stadium, downtown Harare, and I think there were 9,000 people in the audience that day. And I'm living at the time back in Troy, New York, in the ghetto. I was a struggling young Christian songwriter, jingle writer, themes for movies, whatever. And I didn't have hardly any money. And so all this, I mean, I got hundreds, and I don't know how they got my address, but they got it. I got, and phone number, I got hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of requests for Bibles, for money. I didn't respond to any because I thought, you know, I'm lucky if I could buy one Bible for one person at that time. But they had this perception that I'm this white guy from America, and my heart bled too. It's like, oh, wouldn't I love to, you know, I don't know. I hope people that have billions of dollars would get into the enjoyment of giving it away, because, gee, if I had it, what a pleasure it would be to help these people. But also, I think you learn that just by throwing money at people doesn't necessarily make situations better.
Exactly. And you have to be very discerning about how you invest money in those countries, because sometimes by helping, you're not helping. And so you want to do whatever you can to invest in their own infrastructure so that they can basically live independently, that you don't want to create a relationship of dependence.
Now, some churches in America are closing down some of their international missionary work. Why is it important for American churches to invest in foreign ministries? And equally, why is it important for foreign ministries to invest in America by sending their own missionaries here?
Yeah, I mean, so number one, we know that Christianity is on the wane in the Western nations right now. And it's a very sad situation. And of course, those of us who love Jesus and who love the Bible are doing our best to continue to grow the Christian faith here in America. And I think that there's also a philosophy among many in the West that it's really not appropriate for Western missionaries to go to third world countries and preach the gospel. They almost see it as a form of colonialism. And yet, why do we do it? We do it because Jesus tells us to do it.
So in other words, if I go there, they think, some people, the negative people, think that I'm there because I want to convert them to democracy or something?
Yeah, and sadly, you know, there was a time in the early missionary movements, you know, in the early 20th century, where missionaries made the mistake of thinking that the gospel was closely linked to Western culture. And but there's been a great advancement, I think, in the philosophy of missions, that we go and we preach the gospel, but we do not basically take away or undermine the local culture. Because every culture has elements of it which are good and elements which are evil that the gospel wants to change. But we're not there to go and to transport American culture in Tanzania. We want to lift up local Tanzanians to preach the gospel in their own culture and their own native tongue.
Well, I can tell you this, and I'm an older guy now, and I guess old isn't so bad. being overweight, you know, this makes me want to lose about 60 to 80 pounds because you'd be miserable sitting in a jet for, you know, 20 hours overweight. So I'd like to go back again. I have a heart for missions. I want to go back. You know, and I will tell you this. Sometimes I don't know what I'm supposed to share or not share because Jesus said, cast ye your pearls not before swine, lest they trample them underfoot. Meaning that if you had a sacred pearl, folks, would you show it to some pigs? You put it in the pig's stall, they're going to step on it. That has no meaning to them. But I give this out only as an encouragement that I will say this. I went to Africa and did that whole thing. Then I went to Haiti. And when I flew into Haiti, I was scared. I'm looking out of my van window that picked me up in Port-au-Prince. And I'm looking out and I see a sea of poverty that I've never seen before. People living in cardboard boxes, just the utter deprivation. And I'm driving along and I feel the peace of the Lord. I'm talking about a supernatural hug from the Lord. And I go, Lord, why are you giving me your peace? They, outside the window, they need your peace. And I grappled with this. I'm still struggling with it. Maybe you would know, but I guess he was letting me know that you go on in my name, and because you've gone in my name, I'm going to comfort you. Maybe he was aware of my apprehension and my fear because, first of all, like you, I was the only white guy in 10 miles, a blanc, and to see such deprivation. There's in all of Haiti, there's not one supermarket like our typical Publix or Price Chopper or whatever it might be. And when I got back to America from Africa, even, I remember my parents picked me up. I think it was in New York City. And I'm looking at, I'm going, these roads are so, it was only a couple of weeks, but I went, these roads are so wide. Yeah. And then I walked in, I said, I should take a video of this supermarket. It's just overabundance. I mean, even in England, they have brown bread and white bread. You go to an American supermarket and they've got 60 different styles of bread. We're living like kings and queens. And I wonder how God's going to hold us responsible one day because, you know, 30,000 kids went to bed and didn't wake up this morning from starvation. There's no reason why there should be no hunger.
Right. Yeah. No, and it's, but that experience that you had in Haiti and that you had in Zimbabwe, it changed you. You'll never see the world the same way ever again.
Tune in again tomorrow at 3 a.m., 7 a.m., or 3 p.m. for the continuation of this interview. I'm your host, Rhett Palmer, and this is a new day.
We'd like to thank Plains Dental Arts in Vero Beach and Port St. Lucie for sponsoring It's a New Day. We'd also like to thank Center for Advanced Eye Care, Dr. Mallon, Center for Advanced Eye Care with offices in Fort Pierce and in Vero Beach. Thank you for supporting us.